Can you just count down 1, 2, 3 for me just to test audio levels here?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Perfect. Should be in good shape. All right, so I'm just going to kind of mix this live. These are sort of exclusive interviews with the book. So it's a little bit less, it's not a formal podcast. We may, we will probably also be releasing some segments and stuff from the interview in our Actionable Marketing podcast as well. But for the most part, this will be just sort of a self-contained bonus material. And okay. Then also featured in the book. So, all right, I'll get started. And it's Moria,
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yep. Perfect. All right. Hey everyone, it's Garrett here, and welcome to the 10X Marketing Formula. I have another exclusive interview today with Ash Moria, and Ash is a successful entrepreneur and the author of two of my favorite books on the Lean Startup Movement. That's Running Lean, and then also his most recent book, Scaling Lean. And he's somebody who's been directly involved in the lean movement and understands how lean works, how startups have been using lean to build product market fit and build their businesses. And he's done that with a tool called the Lean Canvas. And so I wanted to have him on to just dig into how this all works and how we can apply it as marketers to the work we're doing every single day. So welcome to the I guess it's a show, Ash. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thank you, Garrett. Pleasure's all mine.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming. Been a long time fan, and we've been able to cross paths a few times, but it's nice to sit down again.
Yeah, definitely.
So maybe for our listeners, just get started with give me the overview of the Lean Canvas. A bit of how you got to that tool, but then what it does and how it works.
Yeah, so maybe the high level concept of the Lean Canvas is it's a tool that helps you organize your idea around a single page. So you could call it a one-page business plan, but it doesn't have all the things that would typically go in a business plan. It's supposed to be a concise summary. And so what I often tell entrepreneurs that I work with is that at the end of the day, you have to be able to condense your idea, distill it down, and communicate it pretty quickly. That's where the one-page, 10-page slide deck, the executive summary, or the elevator pitch all come from. Because no one's going to read an entire business plan if it's 20, 30, 40 pages. And that's a big lost opportunity. So that's in kind of a nutshell. The Lean Canvas can be seen as a replacement of that, but it really is a idea sharing tool. So because it's a single page, you can create one of these pretty quickly. And I guess we can walk through the process here a little bit, but you can create one of these very quickly. The power of it is that if you put it in front of someone, they can't help but read it or scan it, and then a conversation ensues, and that's where you find your biggest learning, your biggest insights, whether that's with an advisor, investor, or even customer.
Yeah, I love that. I think you kind of answered two big things there. One, it's sort of this replacement for the business plan, and I love the idea of that because it's sort of like in those business plans, you get these 40, these 50-page documents, and so you end up with a lot of filler stuff in between, and this just kind of cuts that out, right, and goes straight to the heart of the matter. Is that a good way to summarize it?
That's a very good way, and also I sometimes throw this analogy of thinking of an initial idea like clay, or I like Lego blocks because they're building blocks on the canvas, and so you're really trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle. And when you're trying to write a big document, I've written a few books, and they're giant jigsaw puzzles, and they're very frustrating because you change something and the whole thing changes.
Right.
So with the canvas, you can play with it, you can reconfigure things, you can go and iterate with it pretty quickly, till at least the story begins to connect on paper, and then you start sharing it. And then, of course, there's a lot of the validation pieces, which will then further reinforce your guesses or your insights or your hypotheses. And that's kind of what's the power of that kind of a tool, is just a faster feedback loop to testing an idea than just literally spending weeks or months just trying to write this big document out.
Yeah. This is something that would be used by a startup or a new business. It's really trying to get an understanding of what they're building and the market they're going after. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it usually is a great way when you have a new idea to sketch one of these canvases. We also find businesses that are already established when they're doing new initiatives or maybe resegmenting or going after a new market. That's another time where this can be a great way to get the idea down and start some of that initial planning before jumping all in.
So I want to get into it. You covered on a little bit on testing ideas, but maybe starting before that, you know, give me kind of version 1.0, the first time they sit down and they're going to go through the Lean Canvas, you know, what are they going to be talking about? What's that conversation look like, and how do they go about building it?
Yeah, so the Lean Canvas was designed to be, you know, as intuitive as we could make it. So a lot of the blocks should be self-explanatory. There's a block in there for your customer. So this is, you know, who are you building this thing for? There's a box for the problem. What problems do you solve? There's a box for the solution. How will you solve it? And then it kind of goes around where you start talking about your unique value proposition. You know, how would you get attention? Go to market. How would you make money? How would you find customers with your channels? How would you defend against competition? So you can get through all these aspects of the canvas. But what I find that a lot of entrepreneurs, and I've been one of those, is that when we have an idea, the thing we see most clearly is the solution. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to rush to. We just want to go ahead and build this amazing product out and then just launch it. And oftentimes that may not be the right approach, because what might be crystal clear in your mind may not be what people need or want at the moment. And so you may have to you know, test that. So the canvas allows you to really take a backseat, and while you're describing your solution, you're doing it in the context of who are your customers, ideally your early adopters, and what problems do you solve for them. And that kind of, that exercise in itself creates a transformation in just how you might view your product. When you go have this conversation with someone else, again, when you listen to an entrepreneur, typically they pitch just the solution, but when you show the entire canvas, we talk about these other 8 or 9 boxes, and that creates a very rich conversation around the business model and not just the solution.
Yeah, that makes sense. What is the next step, you know, once that first, the draft of a Lean Canvas is completed? You know, what does it lead to next?
Yeah, so in the process that I describe, it's really then looking at the canvas and identifying what might be the riskiest set of assumptions around this idea. Sometimes it could be, you know, technical risk. You may try to do something that's just very hard to do, maybe never been done before. So some amount of technical due diligence or feasibility testing may be in order, but you don't have to go all the way through, because very quickly for most products today, the risk shifts into can we build this, and more into should we build this. And so that's a conversation that I'd really sit down with an entrepreneur and have, which is, if you were to put this business model, you know, if you were to go launch it, what are the riskiest assumptions here that would make this idea just fall apart? Let's start testing those. And as I mentioned, oftentimes that is assumptions around who your customer is or what problems you're solving. We want to get outside the building and look for evidence that these are problems that keep our future customers up at night, because if they don't,
right,
they're just not coming to use this product when it's built.
What's the risk for a company that doesn't use this process?
Well, so the traditional way we have built products is a bit of what I was describing before, is we get this big vision, but it really is just an idea that's boiled down to a solution. Let's go build this amazing product and good things will happen. And let's hope that customers find us and buy our product. The challenge with all of that is that all that takes time. All of that takes a lot of money and effort. And even if you subscribe to a release early, release often kind of mindset. I've been in software for, you know, over a decade now, and things that you think are going to take you 2 months, you know, end up taking 4 or 6 months. And by the time you really start getting real feedback, you know, it's 8, 9 months if you go down that approach. And it's just a very expensive process. This approach kind of flips that, and you're really testing for maybe market demand before actually building. And then there's a concept of the minimum viable product. We are also trying to prioritize the biggest features that will have the biggest impact. Yeah. So we don't have to go ahead and build things when we initially launch that are maybe required in the product but not required day one. So there's that level of prioritization that also needs to happen, which allows us to go really fast and start the learning process.
I always think of it as, you know, as you go into a venture, and, you know, in this case, we're talking about a startup and a business, you have a set of, you kind of identify the assumptions or guesses as to how you think that's going to go, what you think the market needs. And this is just a way to kind of short circuit that and make sure you're right before you go too far, right?
Correct. And I think this is also more and more needed, in that the unfair advantages of the last decade have gone. And what I mean by that is things used to be very expensive to build. Even something like software required expensive licenses, expensive hardware. You had to have everyone in an office because there was no internet. There was no what we're doing today. There was no Skype or co-working facilities. And so people had to spend a lot of money even just to get started. And so the old approach was, you know, create a big vision, write a big business plan, go pitch it, get all this money. And that bought you a lot of time and bought you runway, which no one else had. And that isn't true today. Today, you can find for every idea that's out there, 10 other people starting to tinker, you know, with cloud computing, with the internet, with open source, and doing very similar types of things. So that barrier to entry is changed. And so now it's more important than ever to really focus in on what is the right thing to do and how do I get to market share as quickly as possible rather than just being first to market.
Yeah, absolutely. You can apply that to so many different areas of business and technology. I mean, just things are so fast, and it's the adoption curve is easy. We spend a lot of this book talking about content marketing and the process of creating content. But even if you look at that landscape, the barrier to entry on that is almost zero. Anyone can write. Anyone can have a blog. And what business just about these days isn't doing it already? So you kind of have to find ways just in just about everything to get past and to differentiate yourself into how to understand that market and how to approach it.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So I want to work a little bit later on here and relating it back to marketing and kind of get some of your takes on some of that. But before we go too far there, can we spend a couple more minutes just talking about MVPs? I think, you know, the minimum viable product is something just what everybody is probably familiar with, but maybe define it a little bit more. And then I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about what it is and then what it is not, because I think it comes with a lot of assumptions that people make about it.
Yeah. So I mean, for right and wrong, the minimum viable product has been used and abused in many, you know, many definitions out there. So I think it's always good to level set. So when Eric was first describing it, he talked about this build, measure, learn loop. So the idea was to go really fast with your first release so you could start this process of learning. But along the way, people began to use MVPs for anything they would put in front of customers, including, say, a landing page or a demo, because that allowed you to learn, it allowed you to go fast, it allowed you to test before you build, to build. And to me, all those things are the right approaches that we need to take to test a product, but they're not really products. And so I have a stricter definition. I describe the minimum viable product as that smallest solution that you build that also creates value for the customer. So if I just show you a demo, I'm promising you value, but until I don't give you whether it's a service, whether it's an actual physical product or a software product or some other thing, that I don't put that in your hands, I don't yet have a product that I'm giving you. I'm not creating value for you. And then where I also kind of come in that is making this big kind of business modeling distinction that there is a difference between building something interesting that people will use and then turning it into a business. So in order to do that, you have to also capture some value back, or in other words, get paid or know how you're going to get paid. So for me, the MVP is that smallest solution you build that both creates value for your customers, but also captures some of that monetizable value back, whether in the form of actual money or in the form of, you know, data like what Facebook does, which they then turn into actual money down the road, that still is perfectly fine.
Sure. So if you do, I love that, by the way. I think smallest solution that creates value, I think that's going to resonate with a lot of marketers, because particularly in content, we're always thinking about how does our content and the work that we're doing create value for our potential customer base. How do you know, though, when you've done an MVP, you know, if it was a good test of those assumptions, and if it, you know, went well or went poorly, should you go back to the Lean Canvas? You know, how do you kind of determine what's next after you've done an MVP process?
Yeah, so it needs to start, and this is also some of just the maturity in the Lean process itself, is that I guess the old mantra used to be just get outside the building because we were spending too much time inside. Mm-hmm. And then it got morphed into let's get outside the building with a minimum viable product because then we can see if people actually use the product or not. And then now it's even more let's do some of that business modeling work. So where I kind of come in with the Running Lean book is before you even build a minimum viable product, let's kind of on paper see what that business model might look like, you know, who are the customers, what would they pay, and we can go and start testing all those assumptions with that minimum viable product. So unlike a lot of people, I don't recommend hiding behind alpha labels and beta labels and giving away your MVP for free. I look at it as a carefully researched solution to a customer problem. And so instead of using the alpha labels, why don't you use something like early access or, you know, exclusive or golden ticket or something like that? Mm-hmm. Find your right early adopters, give them something super valuable. And if you can collect money from them, if that's your business model, then start doing that, maybe not day one, but as early as you possibly can. If they aren't your customers, and figure out who your customers are and try to close that loop as quickly as possible. Because to me, that is the not ultimate validation, but at least the first litmus test is, can I create value and can I capture some of that value back? Now, how much and, you know, all of those will come from the business model. So if I were building a Facebook type story versus a software as a service story, which was targeted at, say, a smaller niche, obviously the numbers are going to be different, but all of that, all those numbers, you would build those assumptions. You would build up a model that allows you to then test, is my MVP moving me in that right direction or not?
Yeah, that's super good. It makes a lot of sense. So I think, you know, I like to think of this as, I love this kind of analogy we started with, actually, where the lean canvas as this replacement for the business plan, right? This big, heavy document. And I think in a marketer's world, the marketing plan is the kind of the equivalent, right? There's this big document. We're making a bunch of guesses and assumptions on how we think our potential audience will respond, what kind of traffic or lead scoring or lead qualifications we will see from there. And we kind of pick a lot of methods that we think will work, but we don't really ever take the time to test them out. So how do you think that marketers, or really anyone that's kind of going into sort of a new process or a new campaign, in a marketer's case, a new venture, can use that lean canvas process to improve what they're doing and to prevent them from going too far down the wrong path?
Yeah. So in the second book, I kind of describe this lean sprint process, which is essentially taking some of the things we already talked about and rolling it into a sprint-like cadence. So some of your readers may have heard of Agile and Scrum, which is a software development type of a cadence. There's a design sprint now. And the lean sprint is essentially kind of a third type of a sprint, but it has the same principles, which is time boxing is critical with ideas, because very quickly time escapes us. Time is, in my view, one of the scarcest resources we have, because we never get it back. Yeah. And so the whole idea of the lean sprint mindset is that whatever project you're doing, whether it's a campaign, a marketing campaign, or actually a new product launch, let's sketch out some of those initial assumptions on a tool like a lean canvas. And it allows us to, again, describe the story of how this will unfold. Let's then begin to identify some of those riskiest assumptions and then design some experiments to test them. And so for any product, if I was doing, considering a new iPhone app launch, I may want to actually test whether there's even demand for that. So I may hit my newsletter, I may hit my audience in other places and show them a screenshot and look for clicks, and then look for people giving me their email addresses, for instance, and then turning those into conversations. All of those could be turned into a 2-week, 3-week sprint. And the idea there is that we can begin to get some of those leading signals or early indicators on whether the campaign or the idea we're doing is heading in that right direction, or you need to course correct or pivot or reset it.
And one thing I like about that is you talked earlier about how you really encourage startups to be actually taking it to a purchase or revenue, like actually really, is that correct? Like actually going to the, and measuring it based on the final metric that you really need the customer to help you out with, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. So one of the universal truths of all businesses is that we all want more customers. And I've actually, in a cheeky way, gone and tested that, and no one has said no to me yet. If we are all in here to create a customer, why don't we try to get as close to one as possible? Yep. And of course, that's not always the case, but whatever, however far you can go, you want to take it there. Because ultimately, when we just measure what people say they might do in the future, like, I like your product, you know, tell me when it launches and I'll use it definitely. As much as they say that, they don't always, I would say, they usually don't follow through with that. So you want to turn those into actual measurable actions that you can use to increase that confidence.
So in kind of the marketer's world, I would kind of say whatever your end goal KPI is of the campaign, if it is leads or if it is actual customers, whatever it might be, that's where you should be measuring for your MVP. You shouldn't be measuring a lesser KPI or something sort of on the perimeter, right?
Sure, yeah.
Very good. So I think even still, it's hard to see what that smallest solution that creates value could be. Is there an example or a story that you could tell us where a company, it doesn't have to be a marketer, obviously, but if somebody was able to take kind of a big idea and turn it into that small MVP without going too far?
Yeah, so I guess there are many of these, but I would say that, and this is also where I kind of differ from some. So I'm not of the opinion, let's just go and build what we think is going to be the MVP and then test it. Because I find that in theory, while we can learn from that MVP, sometimes all we learn is that idea really sucked and, you know, we just shouldn't do it. And we don't quite know where to go because people don't tell us what was wrong with it other than I just don't want it. Mm. And so I find that the process that we end up using is quite different, is that we run a series of problem interviews where we are really going and talking to customers and trying to understand what outcomes or what jobs or what tasks are they trying to do and where are they running into issues. And then we follow that up with a solution interview where we might show them a demo. We might talk about the value proposition. We might talk about the pricing. And we try to convert them into a customer. Maybe they give us that advance payment. Maybe they just give us their permission to follow up when we're ready. Those are all still okay. And that's when we know what's going to go in that MVP. So there is a process to how we define it. And maybe to just give an example of that, there was someone in my workshop a few years ago kind of shared the story, which I still share with others. And he had this idea of retrofitting GPS into cars. You know, it's an expensive process. If you have a car that doesn't have GPS, to go and buy all the equipment you need is an expensive process. But he had this idea of potentially doing this with a gadget he was going to build that went around the license plate holders, so those plastic things that you can put on a license plate. And so that was basically the idea, but he didn't quite know how far to go, like what features people would want, you know, how they would use it. He didn't quite know that. He did know that he wanted this to be a one-to-many sale, so he knew that he wanted to sell this to rental car companies, not big rental car companies because they already had cars with GPS. So he was going after the more mid-tier rental car companies. But what he used was a prop, so for him to understand what his MVP was going to be, he took one of these license plate holders and put some circuitry in there, but it was non-functional. It was not functional at this point. And then he sealed it shut. And then he went into a rental car company, asked to speak to the manager, propped this little prop of a demo in front of him, and say, "I found a way to retrofit GPS into cars. You just put this in the car, and you've got GPS capability." So that was both his value proposition and his demo right there. Now, unlike what most people think, the license plate, the manager didn't bring out a screwdriver and try to understand, you know, what was inside it. He said, "Why don't you sit down and let's talk about what it can do." So over the next 30 minutes, they went back and forth on features, and he eventually left that meeting with a very concise minimum viable product spec. He repeated that process 30 other times and got letters of intent from 30 rental car companies, which gave him a pipeline of customers and helped him define what that minimum viable product was going to be, which he then started shipping 2 months later.
Boy, that's really good. I think that highlights a lot of sort of the things that happen with new ideas and entrepreneurs is you're so quickly wanting to jump into production, right? You want to build and mass produce, and like that's the problem you really think is there. But slowing down and validating it that way by just making one, and not even really making one, but just making one of them, that's pretty powerful. And I can see why it would be helpful.
Sure.
So just kind of maybe finishing up, you know, I think, you know, from this, you know, there's going to be lots of folks that are going to jump, you know, jump to your site. We're going to be linking to the Lean Canvas. You know, what would you just say, you know, two or three tips for the person that's going to be doing it for the first time and working through that process? You know, what should they be thinking about and looking at as they start?
Yeah, so what I typically recommend people do is even time box the exercise, because I find that whenever we put people into, you know, capture idea down, the person gets just overly analytical. They spend too much time. They want to get all the right answers down because they go back to the business planning process where you're building this perfect plan. But I want to kind of reinforce this concept of it's going to be iterative. Think of it like Lego blocks. The first model is not going to be the right one. So time box that activity. When we do these with entrepreneurs, we set a timer for 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And the idea is just to take a snapshot. You've been working on this idea. It's in your mind. You just want to put it down and then take a look at it and see which boxes were easy to fill out, which weren't. You know, what is that confidence interval that you have on each of them? And that allows you to do which is the second step, which is identify that riskiest set of assumptions. And that's how I recommend going about it. So don't look for perfection. That isn't the goal. It's really that snapshot. And then think of it more as an iterative process. The faster you can go around that build, measure, learn loop with that canvas, the more kind of refined it's going to get, the more solid it's going to get, the more your confidence is going to go up, your success rate's going to go up.
Yeah. And we'd call that failing, or would you call that failing fast?
So there's too much taboo around the word failure. And I find that sometimes when we're going that quickly, when you're going in 2 or 3 week sprints, I would actually start saying it may not even be failing, just learning, because sure. You actually kind of switch with evidence before you even like have a failure that you say, oh, we failed. You just say, oh, I thought this was going to happen. It didn't, but I know what to do next. And so would that be really failing or learning? So you can go with it either way. So I find that, again, if you don't wait too long, if you can make the learning come very quickly, it looks a lot more like course correcting and learning than really failing. So I prefer kind of using that, because a lot of people still shy away from the word failure. It's got a lot of taboo around it.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. You, as always, Ash, you're very good at kind of taking an idea and adding a new layer to it and defining it better. I think that is exactly right. I mean, the failure may help learning, but the goal is learning. That's why it works. So that's perfect. All right. Well, thanks, Ash, for going through this. I think it's been really helpful to our audience. And maybe just to kind of finish things up, where can our readers learn more about you and the Lean Canvas?
Sure. So I have kind of collected a bunch of things we have done over the years, so the books and the canvas, just into a website called leanstack.com. So that's STACK. And that's where you'll find a lot of our tools. We have an online platform, links to the books and things. So that's where I point to everyone. That's the easiest way to find our stuff, and also me.
Very cool. I think what I'd say is just the key to many things that we do at CoSchedule is based on a lot of these ideas, and you know, just understanding how MVPs work, how to test assumptions, making sure that we don't go too far too fast, and as Ash would say, learning fast is a key part of everything that we do, even marketing and especially the business. So, Ash, I thank you for sharing that bit with us. I thank you for the work that you do in the canvas, and I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Garrett.
All right.